Hey, my friend, you've made it. You've made it all the way to episode 405 of the 200 Churches podcast.
And what I have done with other churches where I essentially acted as a consultant, whether they were supporting churches to us as missionaries or later as a professor, they'd invite me to come in and help their leadership teams get their thinking together. And I realized it's better to have the leaders come together. We look at the history of where we've been. We look at what we have today and then say, based on what God has done and what God has given us, where do we think God is taking us? For sure, I can help influence some of the conversation, but it's better when people out of their own experience and in a conversation in sort of a brainstorming format are able to share their thoughts, because then they feel that they have buy-in and they're part of it, rather than, you know, the one big brain thinking this is what everybody could be doing.
This is the 200 Churches podcast. My name is Jeff Cady, and I was in the digital sound studio with a good friend, Dave Ronan. I've talked to you about Dave over the years. Dave is in episode 72. Where he talks about when you come into a church as a new pastor, or maybe as a new young pastor, what are some of the things that you should do? And as he shared his leadership experience in that episode, it was great advice for new pastors in new ministries just starting out with a new group of people. So recently I was, and you'll hear it in the episode, I don't want to review it now, but recently I had opportunity to talk with Dave after more than 8 years, and he was so kind and gracious to give me some time to record with him, and I tell you what, it was like a reunion. It was a blast. I had so much fun talking with Dave. You're going to hear that now. And then I'll be back at the end of it just to wrap things up. But here's my conversation with Dave Ronan, the pastor of a local church in Tokyo, Japan. Dave Ronan, it's only been 8.5 years since you were on the podcast. Welcome back.
It is good to be back, Jeff. It's great to hear your voice and see your face. And thanks for having me.
Well, from episode 72, you just hop over to episode 405.
And here we are again.
That's awesome. So, Dave, I'm looking at the shelves behind you in your office.
Yes.
And I don't see them full. It looks like you may not have been wherever you're at long. So update us. Well, where are you at now? And maybe if it's possible, just fill in the last 8.5 years since you and I saw each other on Mayo Mountain.
You're right. That was way back in the day. I think we used chalkboards to teach on, you know, in those days. But so behind me, I have my very sparse personal library behind me. So what's happened since then? When you and I spoke last, I was teaching for the Air Force and had just come from teaching at the Special Warfare Center at Fort Bragg. And my degree is in, my PhD is in intercultural studies. So the idea there was to teach folks about working cross-culturally. In the time that I moved to New Jersey, continued teaching for the Air Force there and was helping advisors who would go to other countries and teach there. I just God put it in my heart to ask him what he wants me to do with the rest of my life. I was perfectly content doing what I was doing. But I really just thought there was a tug deeper in my heart to do something else, that God wanted me to do something else. So I asked him what he wanted me to do. It just got this phone call about 10 days after I began this prayer, very intentionally praying for God's will here. And a friend of mine called me from Japan that I hadn't spoken to him in probably 2 years. He said, "Dave, we're in an unusual situation. COVID is just hitting, and we need a pastor for our church. And do you know anybody?" Which is kind of how Japanese people ask if you're interested. They don't want to ask. They want to ask.
Indirect.
You know. Right, right. And so I said, "I just happen to know a guy." And of course, I was thinking of myself here. And we quickly switched into, tell me about the position. And of course, that's here at this church, which you're seeing the bookshelves behind me now. We got here in June of this year. So from December of 2020, when we first spoke on the phone, until June of 2022, we were not able to come because in Japan was not giving work visas for any foreigners. They were actually keeping non-Japanese citizens out. It's just with the density of population in this country, it's just a control measure that worked here that probably it's more difficult for Americans to understand. But yeah. That's what about a year and a half of delay was about. But I'm here now. Yeah. So in June, my wife and I arrived here, and I'm assumed the role as a senior pastor of the Kanto Plains Baptist Church in Western Tokyo, just outside of the Yokota Air Force Base.
I am assuming that there are some Air Force personnel at your church.
Yes, you've assumed correctly there. About 50% of our congregation is Air Force people. So you can begin to see the timing, the experience in my background, and the nature of the membership here. I was a pretty good fit for them, having lived in Japan for a decade as a church planting missionary. I understood a little bit about working with Japanese people, but this church was Japanese and U.S. military. And of course, my background was right in line with a lot of those folks. So this really was one of those hand of God moments.
So with the Japanese people in your church, are they people who speak English as well? And do most Japanese people speak at least a entry-level amount of English?
Right around here, outside the U.S. military base, that people speak, a modicum of English. They know words. The folks who come to our church here, they speak a little more than just words. I preach in I use Japanese words, but I preach in English. But occasionally I'll use Japanese words. Just having not spoken Japanese for decades now, it's just my language skills are at a level where it wouldn't be fair to anyone to try to preach in Japanese. So I preach in English, and they're very gracious. Now, what I do is I manuscript my entire sermon, and then I have someone actually translate that. And then we publish in print the sermon paragraph by paragraph, English, Japanese. That way, the Japanese congregation can at least follow along if they can identify where I'm at in English. And then we use slides and put them up as well so they can see the verses, and we can try to keep everybody together. But it's a lot of work, honestly, to prepare for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not what you're probably used to. That's not been your norm. That does seem like a lot of work, but I assume that the Japanese people really appreciate it.
They do. And I'm an American. And so when I'm speaking, I have what I have written down, which is, I may have 8 pages of sermon notes. I mean, it's really the narrative written out. And then all of a sudden, they'll make, hey, this isn't, none of this story you're telling us is written down. I can see it in their faces. And they're right. It just comes to me when I'm preaching, because you know what, for those of us who've spoken publicly, that happens sometimes. And something comes to you in that moment. And so yeah, they are grateful for everything that's written down until I go off script. And then they're trying to figure, where is he at?
Well, I just assumed that the rule was you can't go off script. You just gotta read what's in front of you, but that's not necessarily the case.
Well, I should, but I just sometimes, when you're speaking, you can think of something that's a little smoother or a little more effective, and you're just going to use that. And
well, the challenge is you've got half the group can understand you just fine.
Right.
And it's hard not to try to speak to them, while trying to speak to everybody.
Right.
I would imagine that's a challenge.
It's interesting. Like last Sunday when I was preaching, I was talking about idolatry. And I could just see the Americans were like, that's not really part of our experience. And that's really true. Where the Japanese people were totally understanding what I was saying. And of course, they were kind of shocked when I'm talking about Exodus 20 and verses 3 and 4, God's, you know, he is the only God and you shall have no graven images. And to mention to them, hey, the way that you were probably brought up to worship ancestors actually makes God angry. And, you know, you could see one half of the group was like shocked and riveted. Of course, they were sad because they were sad that their lives had been aligned with what God did not want. And the Americans, on the other hand, were like, why is this that important? None of us do that, you know. And I have moments like that anyhow, where I realize that I have two different groups and yet have to minister to both.
So you're an intercultural studies guy,
right?
So you understand some of this stuff. So now you and your wife have been there since June. So it's been about four, almost 5 months now.
Yeah.
And, and what were some of the, because when you and I last talked, which to me seems like yesterday, but it was May of 2014, we talked about when a pastor gets to a new work, how, you know, you don't change up a whole lot of things. You build relationships. You probably don't, I've listened to it a few times. You probably don't recall a word that was spoken in that episode. But so tell me some of the things that you've done to have a smooth transition in. I mean, this is on top of the fact that it's been a year and a half, and there's been COVID and everything else.
Yeah.
But once you got there, what are some things that you're doing right now to help the leaders in your church?
Well, for me, it's getting to know everybody. And of course, understanding that they haven't had a pastor for the last 2 years. They are not sure what to do in many cases, and they want me to make a decision sometimes, but they're a little bit concerned that maybe I won't understand everything about their experience and the history of which. So in cases like that, what I usually do is I'll say, oh, that's a good question. That's something we should probably address. And then I'll just turn to the elders and say, what do you think? And then invite them into the discussion. And I usually just do whatever seems to be the consensus among them, rather than assert myself. Even though there are sometimes there are issues that I might want to pursue at that moment, I just don't do that. It's not a big deal. It's just part of my way of saying I'm not here to tell you what we're going to do. I'm here to build the relationships, so we can do this together as a team.
So tell me about your church, about who's on staff, what the lay leadership looks like, how many come, what different services do you have?
We've got a total of how many people come is different than the number of members, of course. We probably have about 50 people that will come on any given Sunday. So it's a small number compared to the size of the building. Actually, the size of the building is huge. It can accommodate well over 300. So you can imagine how services will feel.
Yeah.
Now, that's largely because we had a large group. COVID hit, and it was sort of created a church panic. And even to this day, we still have church members that come and participate not on Sunday morning, but they participate in the affairs of the church. They're involved, but their concern is still they have ailing members, family members at home. They don't come and they don't want to come on Sunday for fear of contracting COVID. And then sure enough, I got here in June and in August, and I'm fully vaxxed and boosted as many times as I could be. And I still got a little case of COVID. It was just a couple of days. It wasn't even as bad as the flu, but I did get it. And that, of course, you can imagine, you know, people were just cautious. So that's part of the issue. The other thing is, I think, is because of COVID, it's been a pretty good excuse to not come to church for a while. you know, just to kind of take a break. And sad as that is. So I have to do a little bit of work, reconnecting with people, introducing myself a little bit more to the folks who used to come. That's the general size of the church, about 50 people. We probably have about 30 of those are actual members. So we'll have, you know, it's 30, 20. It's, I say almost a 50-50 split with members. As far as the organization of the church, we have elders and we have deacons. And so we have four elders, of which I'm the senior pastor is a member of the elder board. But we have three other elders then. So there are four of us totally on the board.
Dave, tell me, was the church without a pastor when COVID hit?
Yes, they were without a pastor at that time. And that
so made it, he didn't leave because of COVID?
No. That was the big concern for the leadership. The elders were like, oh no, what are we going to do? How do we get a pastor when, first of all, we're not going to be able to bring anybody from the States? The church is a totally independent church here in Japan. The Japanese government isn't used to having a Japanese church hire a foreigner to come pastor the church. They think, well, you're an independent church. You have your own building and pay your own salaries. Why wouldn't you just hire somebody in the country? But because COVID hit, really no one even in the country moved. Not that they moved that much anyhow. I mean, Japan is only about the size of the state of Montana, for example, I mean, in landmass. So there isn't as much migratory activity as maybe we would have in the U.S. You know, people move to different regions of the country and things like that. Why do I say that? It's just because when they were without a pastor, trying to get one for this congregation was going to be no small feat. Because if you were a Japanese person, he would have to speak really English really well. And that, of course, was just they weren't able to find anybody like that. So I guess I was at the end of the list and then they called me.
So the Japanese believers, they don't want to split and have two different churches. They want to be involved with Americans from the Air Force Base?
They do. And they're happy to build relationships with the Americans that way. Now, having said that, probably about 25 years ago, the church did actually, there was a large Japanese congregation, and they thought, you know what? It's really hard for us doing the English. We would rather just have a Japanese service. And with the church's blessing, they agreed this wasn't a split. This was, a church plant, essentially, that a lot of the Japanese folks who really wanted just Japanese language, they have their own church. And the pastor came and met me a couple of weeks ago, actually, introduced himself to me, told me he went around the church building and said, and by the way, I built that part of the church. And you know, when they did, but it was a good spirit. It's, you know, unlike some of the less noble circumstances that some churches experience, that wasn't the history here.
So what do you think you're going to do with the size building that you have and the number of people? Have you thought about ways to mitigate that?
Well, I mean, the best thing to do is fill it up, you know, with people. But, we have just looked at this and all of it. I mean, the elders and I and, some of the closer mature believers. And we've just looked at this as let's just grow like Jesus wants us to grow rather than have specific programs like we're going to do this and we have to get people to come in to do that. We've done that. Sometimes it's tiring, and nobody really looked enthused about doing that.
Yeah.
So we're working on a small group model that if we can just build friends in a small group and see people develop spiritually, at least this is what I shared with them. That I have found that to be the most beneficial in my own personal spiritual walk is to know a small group of people and work with them, share your life, and invite others into that community. So we're working off of a small group model here.
What are the pros and cons with the Japanese culture in that?
Well, I mean, the Japanese are, the society is almost a small group in itself. They really don't have a broad network of friends. I mean, they just don't. It takes a long time for Japanese people to become friends with other Japanese people.
Really?
It takes time, yeah. And so they understand that. And then, so in many ways, you know, the church experience for the Japanese folks when they come in, and, you know, we Westerners were kind of open, welcoming. And it's nice to be welcomed. I mean, anywhere in the world, people like to be welcomed, but they don't know what to do sometimes. I mean, they're just a little bit awkward. And so it takes time. But, you know, it's just they have to, you know, it's like anybody. How do you come into the group? You know, I became a Christian when I was 20 years of age. So I didn't grow up Christian, if you will. I mean, a real born-again Christian. I grew up as a Catholic. But I remembered feeling many times when I went to church, like, man, all these people, they know each other and they talk to each other. I don't know them. And I don't know how to get in to know them. It just, I did feel like the outsider looking in.
Yeah.
And Japanese, if you multiply that by 10, is kind of how they, because they feel that way naturally to begin with. So this is the journey. This is the real area of need for us, is to seek God to show us how to bring people into these smaller groups. I mean, when I say that, what we do, we have a men's group that meets, and I have done this for years when I was in the States. And so I appreciate, again, the modeling of small groups. Yeah, we bring them in and we'll watch a video. We'll interpret if it's in English, you know, we interpret it. And then we turn and invite people to talk. Usually the English speakers are the ones that will talk. And yet we find that, marvelously, there are some Japanese people that want to talk too. And these guys will step up and they'll share a lot of their lives. And it's in that experience of sharing and just getting that people you don't know, you're kind of stepping out in the unknown, and you share something about yourself, and voila, suddenly they feel connected with each other.
Interesting, Dave. And you've been there 5 months. Where do you see this thing going in the next 2 to 3 years? Like, what's your vision? You said you're 65, mm-hmm. and your wife is there with you, but remind me again, she grew up there with her parents?
She did. She grew up in Japan, Okinawa, actually, southern islands of Japan. And she speaks Japanese so well. It's like,
oh, really?
Oh, I'm happy for her, and I'm happy for us. But I have to tell you, when we go places in public, and I try to do the item of business or whatever, and I step on something, which I always do, you know, I make mistakes in that. She says two words, and everybody looks at her like, huh? You really speak Japanese? He's not so good. How did you, you know? And it's this humble moment where I just think God's giving me ministry, but he's keeping me humble at the same time, you know, in this role. So yeah, she speaks Japanese, and I honestly, the ladies in the churches love her because they can say anything, and she totally understands. But she works actually as a counselor for the Department of Defense Education for the military school. She just spent 7 years in Eastern Europe being a counselor at a Department of State school there. And now she was able to get this position, which is co-located with the Yokota Air Force Base. And there was another reason why we thought, wow, God is really opening the doors to do this. So
when she was in her last position in Eastern Europe, you said, were you there with her?
No, I was teaching in the States. And so we had, this was an interesting lifestyle change for us.
Tell me about it. This sounds really interesting, Dave. Why don't you explain yourself?
Let me explain here. Yeah,
I can't wait to hear this one.
it was wonderful, actually. We had our home, and we have a home in North Carolina, but I was teaching in New Jersey at the time. But she would fly back over the Christmas break and the summer break. And she would come back to the States during those two breaks. And then she'd have a fall and a spring break. And then I would fly to meet her, and we would travel to places in and around Europe. So we were in Ireland and Spain. We went to spent a week in London and Portugal. It was really kind of fun. But so we would get together every 10 to maybe 12 weeks and then have a couple weeks together during that time. So we really weren't, we lived apart, but we got to see each other so often. It was kind of like, let's plan the next adventure. So it was nice. So actually we looked at when this opportunity opened up for her, we thought, God really is working this out. I mean, who to thunk that we would be able to see something like this, a church that had a need, that needed somebody really with my background, which is, it was not a hard decision for the church. Then this position opened up for her right next door. We are 1.5 kilometers away from the Air Force base. So
the question is your quality of your marriage improved or decreased because of the cramped quarters?
Both, actually.
It's different, right? It's just different.
Our home isn't like, we don't live out of our home in Japan the same way we did in the U.S. In the U.S., it was really kind of a place where you live and there's activities that you do in your house. You like to have a room just to watch TV, and you have another room where you're sleeping. And in our home in Japan, we have a place where we eat and where we sit and relax, but we're not there that much. I'm usually at the church, or we're out doing things, and more of life is outside the house than it is inside. And probably that's because it's so small, we can't do much else inside.
What's the square foot of your home?
It is 620 square feet. Yeah.
Okay.
That's two.
So after you assign the furniture and all your belongings, you get 3 square feet and she gets 4.
I take 3.5 and she takes 3.5. But we have one closet is upstairs where my stuff goes in. And then the other closet is downstairs and her stuff goes in. And she likes that because when she gets ready in the morning, she doesn't have to come back upstairs. Very steep stairs, by the way, coming up.
Well, yeah, if you've got 600 square feet and you got 2 floors, it's probably a ladder.
It feels like that sometimes. You're right. One restroom and it's downstairs. The bathroom or the bedroom is upstairs. So in the middle of the night, you have to be very careful, you know.
Yes, yes.
We just look at it as it's a 5-minute walk from the church, and it's, probably would be 10-minute walk for Sharon to get to work if she were to walk that way. Usually I drive her. The company that she's with provides her a car anyhow, so it works out beautifully. But, yeah, we're not far away. It's just the location was perfect, and we just thought – but it is hard entertaining people because it's so small. Yeah.
So now remind me, do you have kids?
We have 2. Our daughter is teaching in South Vietnam, in Vietnam, I guess it is.
Okay. Now.
But she teaches there. She's a grade school teacher at an international school. And our son is, matter of fact, I just talked to him last night. He's a captain in the Army. He's a helicopter pilot, but we were just setting up an online meeting with the UN command. So I still kind of talk to people in the military group and that. But with a couple of regional experts here with their unit back in the United States, because the sort of low-level escalation of activities here in Asia with Chinese activity, military is always, they're always on the alert. They're always looking for things. So yeah, he does that. So he called me up and said, Dad, do you know anybody we could set up a meeting with the folks? And so I was able to do that, help that way. So That was kind of nice.
You have a very interesting family, Dave, in a very interesting situation. I mean, you're talking to pastors who are pastoring, you know, in rural areas in the United States and some around the world. Probably 18% of our listeners are outside of the United States, mm-hmm. but very few would be anywhere close to your situation where you just moved back in together with your wife in a place like Tokyo.
Right.
So that's fascinating. Tell me again, I don't know if I ever gave you an opportunity to answer this question or if you answered it and I've forgotten, but the next 5 years from now, I never let you answer that question.
Vision.
What's your vision for the rest of your life and for the immediate future of the church?
To be clear, I don't have that kind of clarity yet on where the church is going. And it's not because I don't want to do that or have that. It's just that, after having not been in ministry for over 20 years and then coming back into it, there is a little bit of comeuppance, even in my heart and my thinking. And so I told the elders, I didn't want to come in. If somebody was going to ask me the question, what's your vision? Where are we going? It's not a question I can give a very good answer to yet, because it really was all kind of fast, even for me. But what I'd like to do, and what I have done with other churches where I essentially acted as a consultant, whether they were supporting churches to us as missionaries or later as a professor, they'd invite me to come in and help their leadership teams get their thinking together. And I realized it's better to have the leaders come together and we plan. We look at the history of where we've been. We look at what we have today and then say, based on what God has done and what God has given us, where do we think God is taking us? And for sure, I can help influence some of the conversation. But it's better when people, out of their own experience and in a conversation and sort of a brainstorming format, are able to share their thoughts, because then they feel that they have buy-in and they're part of it. And rather than, you know, the one big brain thinking this is what everybody should be doing.
That is very consistent with what you said 8.5 years ago. And very seriously, I want to encourage you, Pastor, if you're listening and you did not listen to episode 72 of the 200 Churches podcast, to go back and listen to that. I think you'd really find it interesting and helpful. Dave, when I came to my current church, I had been in ministry for 30 years. Contiguously, consecutively, 30 years without really any breaks.
Uh-huh.
And I came and they wanted to kind of know what's the vision.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I looked at them like they had three heads.
Yes. Like, yes.
I just pulled into town, dude. I need to know where to get my gas and groceries, let alone the vision for this church. But the vision is not going to come from me. It's going to come from us.
Yes.
And that was just an innate sense that I had.
Yeah.
That they were thinking, oh, well, but I'm the professional. I should come in and give that direction.
Right.
So, Dave, if it's not the leader laying out the vision, mm-hmm. what are the things that a pastor, when asked a question like that, or going into a church, what are the things that you should be thinking about as a pastor to help the people to come up with a vision? The question's on the tip of my mind, but I can't even articulate it in my own brain.
Right.
What dynamics should a pastor be looking for to try to even help as a group to come up with a vision?
Well, I came in and I was thinking, should I borrow somebody else's model or plan and then nuance it to our church? It would be easier if somebody's done the heavy lifting of, you know, the big rocks, and then we just kind of make ourselves try to fit to that. But I was thinking more and more as I just got to know and talk to people, I could see there's wounds there. There's some voids. There's obviously, you know, a spiritual knowledge gaps, things that people don't really understand. And I thought, God, you're showing me these things. I see the gaps. I just wish that as we're preparing, people could open their hearts and say, God, just show me what I need to see about my own church and where we're headed. You know, that's the part where if everybody is looking to God to see things, he helps us see things. And it's just that we have to be looking. And so many times we just miss the obvious signs that God is showing us and what to do. So it's really, for me, it was more like, folks, I want you to get to know me. And I kind of put myself out there and sharing my story and where my heart was today. And ask people, where's your heart today with God? And where does God want us to go? Where does he want you to go in your growth and development? This is where God is taking me. So in that sense, there's a leadership component. Follow me. This is what God's doing in my heart. And at the same time, it isn't just because I'm doing it. It's because this is what God's tugging at your heart to do too. Do you want to know him a little bit better? Then how can we work together and how can we invite other people who would like to know God just like us and for you to experience him like some of the other people that you know in church? And again, back to it's that small group model, but you have to invite people. And this was just me coming to know folks. You know, they're all really kind of, they're tender and they're uncertain and they don't feel safe all the time. Especially with a new pastor, is he going to like, you know, yeah, some guys can be, they don't mean to be, I suppose, but they can just be so strong, they almost crush your spirit. And I didn't want to do that. And so, you know, it's creating enough safety where people feel like I can share a little bit of my life and I'm going to grow in that kind of pattern and that model. What does that look like in our church? How will we do that? Other than saying something like small groups is how it's happening. But we have to figure that out. And that's something God has to give to all of us. I'm sorry, I'm kind of talking around that thing. But
no, that's good because you gave me time to think through the question that I was actually asking you. And then you kind of arrived at culture. We started talking about vision and what I was thinking was, I don't think it's vision that gets us to where we need to get. I think it's culture. We create a kind of a culture that does its work in us and is the thing that attracts others.
Yeah.
So you talked about a culture of respect, safety, courteousness, where you're honoring.
Welcoming people, yes, right.
Yeah. Yeah, and that you know, somebody may feel uncomfortable if you come in as kind of a heavy-handed leader,
right?
And
right.
You wanted to create an atmosphere, an environment where good things could happen,
right?
And not where, okay, hey everybody, there's the hill, we got to take that hill, let's go. That's different than saying, hey everybody, here's the kind of a place we want to have, and here's how we have to be. And that will attract people to the Jesus we know and love. So you kind of ended up there when you were talking about safety and allowing people to feel comfortable.
Really, that's right. It's if we just live and become the kind of people God wants us to be, as we relate to other people, we want to invite them into our lives. And they kind of want to know what makes you different. I mean, in all the years I worked for the government, people knew probably within a day or two that there was something different about me. And then as we developed a relationship, I was able to share with them, it's because I'm a Christian. And it just doesn't take long. Then people want to know. Then they seek me out in moments when their lives have pain or difficulty. And I am always looking to see, is God opening their hearts or is this just, help me get out of this conundrum I'm in, you know? And most of the time that was the case, but it didn't matter. What mattered was people could see Jesus and they were drawn to that. And that's what we want to be, is those kinds of people who in our hearts and our lives, we do know God and we want to walk with God and we want our hearts to be clean and pure. And we want Jesus to so live in our hearts that we're able to grow because of the attractiveness, that we love each other so much. People say, man, I want to be part of that group because those people really care about one another. They help each other. You know, somebody needs help and somebody's out of work. Yes, you know, somebody in the prayer meeting was sharing that they're losing their job. That's a big deal in Japan. I mean, it's a big deal in America, but it's really a big deal in Japan, and it has to do with age. We're protected. Our age things are protected in the U.S. That's not every country. People say, oh, you're getting too old. You know, you're out of here. Well, you have something like that. Everybody is concerned about this person. And to me, just to see that concern among our group is a huge sign of community and love for an individual. And I just, not that everybody can fix his problem, but
yeah,
he knows people are with him, that he has friends. Jesus said, by this all people know that you are my brothers when you love one another. And that is what God wants us to do. He wants us to communicate that with people. And of course, anyhow, there's so much more to say on that. But
yeah, and there you go on that whole that mushy love thing again. I mean, I don't know about these people. That is my constant refrain. People get a little bit, I think, irritated with me sometimes because I want to reduce everything down to love. When Jesus did that, Paul did that, Peter did that. John did that, you know, and it's so powerful.
Yes.
And you, so speaking of love, Dave,
yes,
we're driving back from Des Moines tonight.
Okay.
And we had dinner with an elder and wife from our previous church.
Okay.
In Des Moines. They were traveling through and we drove over 30 minutes and we met them. And we love these people. They love us. And we've had a relationship for 20 years. And it was fantastic. We're driving back to Newton, where we live, me and my wife. And I said, oh, I gotta record with this guy when I get home. She goes, who is it? I says, Dave Ronan. I said, he's a guy that I recorded with on Mayo Mountain back 8 years ago. She says, well, how'd you get in touch with him? What would possess you to call somebody that you only knew for like 3 days,
yeah,
8 years ago? I would never do that. And I said, when I called him, he seemed like he was, you know, excited to hear from me. So before I finish the story, I want to hear from your perspective. When I called you, like, what did you think? What did you know? Did you even remember me?
I did.
I mean, it was a long time ago, and you seemed to be Johnny on the spot when you answered the call that day. We talked on Facebook Messenger, audio. Well, what did you think when I called?
Let me tell you, you know, it's interesting, because when you and I talked in, what was that mountain again there?
Mayo Mountain?
Mayo Mountain. Mayo Mountain.
That's what I don't know if it is Mayo Mountain, but the Mayo brothers were with us. So.
Okay. So we're on Mayo Mountain, and it was just something about you, I think, when we met and we talked, and I just, I appreciate, there's kind of a very approachability, you know, that quality of people that are just easy to talk to, that I sensed that about you. But the other thing was, you know, you seemed genuinely interested, not just because you wanted to do a recording, but there was something about my story that interested you. And I guess I felt pretty honored. So there weren't many people in life that I met that were as unique as you were, and I just enjoyed as much. So I think that's why I've never forgotten that our talk.
Well, that was great, Dave. That's worth the $75 I'm paying you for that little promo right there.
Plus,
I have a quality. I have a quality.
Yeah.
Well, I remember you when I began to hear your story. I thought, oh my, this guy, you trained, who was it that you taught? International diplomats, or what was the term?
Yes.
Who are the people that you were teaching?
Well, we taught primarily foreign military advisors. These are senior military officers. However, we did have State Department people that would come in for our training as well, because they were going to other countries. And so there were diplomats in our group, but it was fewer of them because we're a military school. So, you know, but what we did related to, we were teaching them the ins and outs of working with other countries in defense spending. And so, you know, the State Department does good things in policy and other aid and stuff like that. But when it really comes to the military things, defense weapons and stuff like that, they usually deferred to the military to give them advice. And they wanted to know how the military worked. So, and that's how we helped them, is understanding the military. And we did know the rules about working with other countries, is all the legalities of it. But yeah, so, it was nice to meet some of the people at those levels.
At those levels. So the level that you and I met at was, I flew to Philadelphia, met up with my college roommate, and he and I drove across Pennsylvania to Western PA because there were twin guys that were in our dorm in the 80s.
Yeah.
The Mayo brothers. The Mayos were a blast.
Yes.
And in college, in the dorm, I'll never forget. I probably shouldn't tell this story. I am going to tell it. No, I shouldn't tell it. I'm not going to tell it. I'm not going to tell the story. It was going to be about one of the Mayo brothers, but it was a blast. So they invited us to go on this quote unquote exclusive pastor's retreat at their place where they were going to do this thing. And so we don't know. We love the Mayo brothers. So we're just going to, I need a chance to see my old roommate. We drive across the state. We end up on this mountain and we're doing some four wheeling and some card playing and root beer drinking and all those tough things pastors do. And I run into you and you start telling me about foreign military advisors and all this leadership stuff that you've done and your missions experience, your ministry experience, your PhD in intercultural studies. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And I told my wife on the drive back tonight, I said, in May of 2014, more than 50% of the American population had no idea what a podcast was.
Oh.
They didn't know. Probably 70% of the American population did not know what a podcast was. So doing it at that time, I'm like, oh, here's a guy. When you're putting out an episode every week, you have to find people. And we realized they're all over the place. So I run into you on the mountain and you and I went out and got in a Ford Expedition. And I didn't have any recording gear on me. I just used the iPhone.
Yeah.
And set it between us.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So last week I was about to do the same thing again with a guy in Omaha. Mm-hmm. I was going to set my iPhone and I was waiting for him to get off the phone with his wife. And in the minutes he was on the phone with his wife, I said, man, I did this with Dave Ronan once. Doggone it. I'm just going to see where he's at. So that's when I pushed the little phone icon and called you. Much to my surprise, you answered. It was a great connection, as it is tonight, from Tokyo. And so I say all that, and I wanted to hear from you just to kind of know how relationships work and to encourage pastors, reach out to people.
Yes.
Reach out to people. Would you say that you're over-encouraged, Dave?
Over-encouraged? Yeah. It's not a problem I have, no.
Okay. All right. See, I've been saying this everywhere. I said this in my church yesterday morning. I say this to pastors. I've yet to meet an over-encouraged pastor.
Right. No.
Just reach out to people.
Right.
Let them know that they matter. So as we land this plane, talk about that just for a minute. Talk to pastors about encouraging others.
Yeah, that really is true. I am not going to ask somebody for encouragement. And I just realized that. It's really, I am not going to say, you know what, I'm feeling bad. Hey, kind of bolster me. I'm just not going to say that. But what is also true is that I do need that. and I need it far more often than I'm even willing to admit to myself. What we have discovered in our own ministry here in the short time that we've been here is what we probably already always knew, but just didn't want to face, is that when we transition, and my wife and I, we've been married 43 years, and we have moved in our married life. This move here to Tokyo was number 50. And when I tell my students this, when I, you know, because each class comes in and they want to know, who are you? What do you got? Why are you? Why should I even bother listening to you? And yeah, we all do that in our minds. You know, we size up whoever the instructor, professor, or preacher is. And so I tell them a little bit about me. And when I'd say we've moved 48 times or 49 times, they look at me and they think, you are lying. That is not true. Nobody moves that many times in their life. And I said, no, and I have to tell them, that's how many it was. And my kids hate the question, where are you from? Because they will usually say, where are you from? I probably lived there at some point in my life.
You know?
So here's the thing. You know, you move that many times in life and you realize, I don't have any friends. I mean, I have friends, but I don't have any close, long-term friendships. They start and they stop. They start and they stop. And my wife's a missionary kid. She even knew that as a kid. Whereas for me, it didn't come until later, you know, after I finished high school and joined the military and then, you know, ministry and all those things. And then I moved a lot all the time. Here's the thing. We're seeing this in our church as well. People need that encouragement. They are moving a lot, and they're shifting, the military folks especially, they're moving communities, and they don't move as much as we do, but we know that it's really hard on their families. They're packing up their stuff, and stuff gets broken in shipment, and you know, a lot of their lives they're changed, and they don't know how to handle that, and just like me, they don't know how to ask for help. They don't know how to say, I need some encouragement, or I feel bad. But this is where we have to do, and my wife is better than I am at this. She can just insert herself into people's lives. Just come right in and, hi, how are you? And she strikes up a conversation. What are you doing? Just asking questions about people's lives, and they want to tell you about their life. Just like you ask me about my life, and I thought, I'm happy to tell you about my life. Somebody wants to know. And I just, oh my, I'm having a moment here, brother. But I just think, yeah, we need encouragement, and we do not and will not ask for it. We just won't. So we have to do it. We have to reach out and touch people's lives and affirm them in some way. And, you know, maybe it's just to invite them in if they're on the outside trying to get in. And invite them into the community and welcome them and offer. That's what people want to know. Is anybody there to help me? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I got two more things that will be done.
Okay.
The first question is, how did you get to come to that event on Mayo Mountain?
Well, probably one of your classmates, Doug Lindo.
Okay.
It may be because he knew the Mayo brothers.
Yep.
And so, yeah, he was friends with them. And Doug and I go to the same church, or did.
Okay.
And he actually taught the newcomers class in the church. And so we happened to know Doug's brother, who went to the same school, the Bible college that we went to. And so all of a sudden we were, you know, hey, you teach this. And you know, Lindo, we knew a guy named Lindo in school. And so we made the connection there. And then when he realized that we had served as missionaries, he said, you know what? There's a group of guys up, that we meet every year or two up in Pennsylvania. You might want to come. And so I got invited up there. And that was the only year that I went up there, was the year you and I met. So,
yeah. Yeah, me too. Me too. I caused such a ruckus. I don't think they invited me back.
I was on one of those four-wheelers heading up the hill, and I almost flipped over backwards.
Oh, I know.
You were on that line, I'm sure.
You had to stand up, and you had to lean over your handlebars to keep your front wheels down.
I know.
I tell you what, I haven't had that much fun before or since.
Yeah.
Quite like that.
Yeah.
That was a rush taking those four wheelers around that mountain. That was good. So the last thing I wanted to say is not so much a question as a thank you for that moment. And the cool thing is we got to capture it, and I've been able to share it at the end of, I don't know how many episodes I've encouraged people. Hey, if you want to know more about this, go back and listen to episode 72. And it's just something that I just get to, it keeps giving. I just can hand it to somebody, and they can go back and they can listen to it like it's happening right next to them. Like they're sitting in the back seat listening to the conversation. That's the beauty of podcasting.
Yes.
And you did that. So thank you. And I consider you, and I have since that time, you were so willing, just like you were tonight with this recording, to be available to others. And I've considered you a friend. So from now on, let's consider each other really, really good friends.
There we go.
That get together fairly infrequently, but maybe we'll try to make it a little more frequently since we're on borrowed time at this point in our lives.
Yeah, that's right. Right. That's right. This is another way God made it so that we can stay friends, is through the technology and that. Yeah. This is good. And thank you, brother. I know it's only been a few times, but I am very grateful for the friendship that we can share together. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you're in Japan, the middle of your day. I'm about ready to go to sleep.
I bet you.
And I told you there's a friend that I have in Perth, Australia. We do the same thing where we record my evening, and it's just before lunch his time. So that's pretty fun. But hey, thanks.
Thank you.
Sir. And if you haven't listened, I've said it 100 times already. Listen to episode 72. And you can hear the beginning. You can hear the rest of the story. Uh-huh.
Hey, send me a link to 72, would you? And I'd like to go back and hear that myself.
Well, you know, if you just Google Dave Ronan, episode 72, it'll pop right up.
Really? Oh, good.
It will. It'll pop right up. You don't even have to put 200 churches in there. But I do it all the time. I'll just put in the guest name and the episode. See, you're one of the few episodes I can recall by number. Because I've used it so many times.
Wow.
I don't recommend episodes, a lot. I should do it a lot more than I do. Uh-huh. But I don't have a memorized by number. I have to put in the guest name and 200 churches, and then it pops up. So,
well, listen, this has been an encouragement to me, and I guess my heart needed it because I'm feeling very grateful right now. So thank you.
Well, me too. And the cool thing is, you are as I remembered you in my sanitized memory. you're the same guy. So I appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Oh, I love that conversation. Oh, what a gift. I think that conversation was a gift to me. And I hope it was a gift to you. And in this way, I talk a lot about encouragement. I talk a lot about building each other up and how you never find a pastor who's over-encouraged. I've been talking more about that in the last year, I think, than ever, but that's been part of our podcast from the beginning, ministry encouragement for pastors of small churches, pastors like you, pastors like me. But to talk to Dave there at the end of the conversation and to hear him say how much he needs encouragement, and for you to see how we interacted with each other. And Pastor, again, I want that for you. I want you to be able to connect with people that are important in your life, that are special to you, significant to you. And maybe as you were listening, you thought of somebody in your own life that you haven't talked to in a while. But you know, if you would just call them, and there's so many different ways. I say call, like you pick up a rotary telephone. For those of you who even know what a rotary telephone is. But But there's so many different ways to have an audible conversation with people now. I did it off of the Facebook Messenger app. Just clicked the phone icon and it quote unquote called him up. And when he answered in Tokyo, I was more surprised than he was. And maybe there's somebody in your past that you have a good relationship with. You know, if you would just reconnect like that, it would all come right back and you'd have opportunity to encourage each other. Pastor, encouragement is oxygen for the soul. And too many of us are having a hard time breathing because there's not much oxygen getting to our souls. You have opportunity to breathe life into people, my friend. Would you take that opportunity? Would you today or tomorrow? Who is that person? You've been meaning to call, you've been meaning to talk to them, but if you would call them and you would share with them honestly and sincerely, hey, this is why you're important to me. This is why I wanted to talk to you. This is what I wanted to thank you for. And here's how I could affirm this person. Go ahead and do it. Nobody is going to ask you to do it for them, but everybody needs more of it. Provide oxygen for the soul. And the gift of this episode to me was that it was that message was just on display very organically, very naturally, very relationally between Dave and I. And I felt it in 2014. I felt it again the other night. Dave and I have a great connection. You don't feel that way with everybody. You know, we've had a lot of guests. Not very many have I connected with on a heart level like I've connected with Dave, even though we've only spent just several hours of our lives together. There have been other guests, though, that I've become good friends with. So, Pastor, we're in ministry together. Relationships are so important. Reach out and talk to somebody today so that you can give encouragement and so that you can be encouraged. It's one thing to listen to a podcast. It's another thing when you're talking to a real live person. So go ahead and do it, Pastor. People need you. Other pastors need you. Normal people need to be encouraged, not just pastors. So reach out to somebody and share that encouragement. Maybe not ministry encouragement, but life encouragement for people that you know. Pastor, good to talk with you. And we'll see you next week on the 200 Churches Podcast.